Well, I appreciate the opportunity to appear here. It's a lot of fun to be with a couple of former colleagues, both Chuck and Ivan. I haven't been on a panel with both of them for quite some time. Now, the issue we're discussing is obviously a very important one, and it's clearly a complex one. If you take an issue where you mix North Korea along with Iran, along with Pakistan, you've got yourself quite a package of geopolitical problems. And I think the irony we see with this administration's policy is it started out, you know, with an axis of evil, and it took out one of those, and it turns out it took out the one that was least threatening in terms of weapons of mass destruction. And what it's managed to do in doing so is make it harder to deal with the other two, because clearly it's created an incentive for the other two to move ahead, as well as the fact we have to deal, as Chuck mentioned, with Pakistan, which, of course, is the real proliferator. You know, we are to believe that AQ Khan was sending plane loads of nuclear materials around the world, and the Pakistani government had no idea any of this was happening. Perhaps that's true, but I'm rather skeptical. So the question is, what do we do in this world where we have a number of potential, if not rogue states, at least dangerous states, and a proliferation of nuclear weapons? Well, my topic is to talk about North Korea, yet another one, a very pleasant member of the international community. And there's certainly lots of good reasons not to want North Korea to have nuclear weapons. This is, after all, a brutal totalitarian regime filled with labor camps in which at least 500,000, perhaps more, people died of starvation in the 1990s. A very, very unpleasant actor. A very secretive regime. You know, one where we don't have very much insight, partly because we have no relations with them. Nevertheless, it's not a regime that we understand very well, the decision-making process, you know, what kind of incentives they have and respond to. We're also concerned about North Korea because it has sold nuclear, it has sold missile materials, so there's a concern about proliferation. If they have nuclear materials, would they be willing to sell those as well? And there's also a concern about a further erosion of the non-proliferation treaty. You know, the more countries which gain weapons clearly creates at least some form of encouragement or incentive for other countries to join the club. After all, if North Korea can join this club, there aren't many standards out there, and one can imagine a number of other countries which would like to be in. So obviously, there are lots of good reasons to want to dissuade North Korea from building nuclear weapons. The question, of course, is how. You know, one of the strategies has been the threat of military strikes. And indeed, there's good evidence that the Clinton administration came very close to going to war with North Korea back more than a decade ago. Actually came very close to going to war without bothering to tell the South Koreans, which, needless to say, went over very well in Seoul at the thought there might have been a war on their northern border, 25 or 30 miles away from their capital city, which contains 20 or 30 million people. Not a pleasant notion for the South Koreans to find out about. And there have been lots of proposals on this: take out the nuclear sites, or if you want to expand that, you take out the nuclear sites and try to blow up all the weapons along the DMZ, and then beyond that, simply try to decapitate the regime and or threaten nuclear retaliation if they retaliate. The problem, of course, is all of this is a very dangerous experiment. You know, my view is that I think the North Koreans would view a strike of any sort on their nuclear facilities in the context of regime change in Iraq and threats of the United States and others over the years, would assume that it's part of a regime change and probably would strike back at the South, either a tit-for-tat retaliation on Seoul or simply by launching an entire war. And there are other consequences, of course, of war, nuclear fallout, depending upon where the prevailing winds take anything. It's not at all clear we could get everything the North Koreans have. And the question of relationships within East Asia, you know, especially with South Korea. South Korea would bear the primary burden of any war. They would not be very pleased to see us take that option. So military options is not a very good one in trying to deal with this. There's economic sanctions. Ivan mentioned, this one isn't very good as well. The problem with the North Koreans, of course, is they're quite willing to accept hardship. That is, the regime itself is happy to accept hardship on behalf of its people. So, Kim Jong-il does quite well and eats lobster and drinks Chivas Regal and a number of other things, but he's quite happy to have, a 500,000 of his people starve. It's not at all clear that we can impose sanctions sufficient to change that calculus that he has made. There's also a possibility of sparking a conflict. To the extent that sanctions really work, one again could imagine a regime willing to strike out. Most important, it's not at all clear that China and the South Koreans are willing to go along. If you want sanctions to work against North Korea, you've got to deal with the two countries that currently provide the most benefits to North Korea. The Chinese provide food and oil. The South Koreans provide a whole bunch of benefits, financial benefits and other. They recently, kind of astoundingly to my mind, cut off rice shipments because they were frustrated with the North Korean behavior, but it's very rare for them to cut off anything for the North. South Korea's behavior has generally been to ship lots of aid to the North because they're hoping to pacify the North despite its past behavior. So it's not at all clear to me that sanctions get us very far when it comes to dealing with nuclear weapons. To the extent North Korea decides that it wants nuclear weapons, the regime is probably willing to accept enormous economic hardship. So we're left with kind of the diplomatic option, and, you know, the negotiations, and an idea of a grand bargain. And theoretically, it makes a lot of sense. The idea is you offer the North Koreans more or less anything you think a rational country could want. Diplomatic relations, trade, aid, membership in international organizations, respect, inclusion, whatnot. Now, the question at the end of the day, of course, is how valuable does Kim Jong-il view his nuclear program? Is he prepared to give it up, even if you come up with the right package of benefits? For much of the Bush administration, we had no idea because the Bush administration refused to talk to North Koreans. I find it kind of odd, you know, how one thinks one achieves much that way. So after 6 years of refusing to talk to them, suddenly the Bush administration decided, yes, let's talk to them, after they had reprocessed enough plutonium, we think, to give them another 8 or 10 nuclear weapons. That is a rather curious policy, needless to say. So we have the February agreement, which we've gone through a soap opera of the last couple of months of can the North Koreans get their $25 million back or not. Apparently, we've finally gotten it to them through a Russian bank. They've invited in nuclear inspectors. So I'm waiting for the next round. Because the North Koreans like to play this game, and there's always a little bit of progress, and then suddenly there's a new demand or a new problem or something. So we'll see where it goes. It is at least conceivable, I'm quite prepared to admit, that this deal will work out, but past experience suggests that we should be rather cautious in our expectations. I think what we see is a worthwhile effort, but let's have no illusions about the likelihood of it working. So then one can try to say, well, are there alternative pressure points, alternative strategies? And to the extent there's an alternative strategy, it's relying on China. Because China has the most influence, China has the most power. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal a few years ago that argued what we should do is convince the Chinese to invade North Korea. And I thought, yes, and that or the Martians may come as well, or what? I mean, I'm sure there are solutions out there, but we have to get real. China is going to act on its interest. China certainly is not interested in staging an invasion. The question is China willing to put enormous economic pressure on the regime, try to stir things up within the regime? Well, we would have to convince the Chinese that it's in their interest to do so, kind of making bleating statements about the international community are not likely to move Beijing very far. And there are arguments to suggest that North Korea should be concerned, or that China should be concerned about North Korea's behavior. There's an increased threat of war as long as North Korea is puttering around with a nuclear program. If nothing else, we've threatened it. So from China's standpoint, that's not a very good thing. China also fears economic collapse, fears of what might happen to a North Korean regime, just as the South does. The fear of millions of refugees pouring over the border. Today, China sends its refugees back to the tender mercies of Kim Jong-il's police and labor camps. But if you suddenly were dealing with not tens of thousands, but millions of refugees, China does not like that possibility. And China presumably would not like the possibility of proliferation throughout the region. And I think that the best hook that we have to deal with China is to suggest, if North Korea decides to build a nuclear arsenal, wouldn't it be a pity if South Korea and Tokyo and maybe even Taipei followed suit? And we wouldn't have much inclination to stop them because, frankly, if the North has those weapons, why shouldn't its neighbors have it as well? My guess is that's the kind of sentiment that China would not be appreciative of. Beijing certainly doesn't want nuclear weapons in Tokyo, certainly doesn't want them on the island of Taiwan, probably wouldn't like to see them in South Korea. And that strikes me as being a low-key, private kind of argument to make to the Chinese. But even so, again, does China have the wherewithal and the willingness to try to force North Korea? Not clear to me. So in this case, if none of those work, then we're stuck with the issue of living with North Korea. What do we do? Are we prepared for North Korean nuclear weapons? In thinking about that, I think it's worthwhile to ask, why does the North want nuclear weapons? There tends to be an assumption, I think, on the part of some folks that obviously they want them for aggression. The North wants to build a bunch of bombs to drop them on people. I think, in fact, that's rather unlikely. The North Koreans are evil, not stupid. They certainly understand that an attack on the U.S. would earn overwhelming, utter destruction. And so long as there's a nuclear umbrella over South Korea or Japan, the same thing would happen. So the North Koreans understand that. Kim Jong-il, I think, is rational, though evil. I think there are other reasons, one of which is deterrence. Let's face it, put yourself in the shoes of Pyongyang. You look across the border to the south. South Korea has 40 times the GDP, twice the population. It's allied with the United States, the unipower, the great superpower. And basically, it's also allied with the hated Japanese and those South Koreans who've kind of been tools of the U.S. for all that time. And your allies have fled. I mean, China and Russia aren't going to save you. That's all in the past. So from a North Korean standpoint, having a couple of nukes is probably a good thing. It's the best way to try to preserve your regime or your system, as North Koreans once told me, their social system, as they referred to it. You could certainly see a desire for deterrence against the United States. It would not be unusual for the North Koreans to look around the world and say, gee, the U.S. likes to bomb other countries. It can be Serbia, it might be Bosnia, it might be Iraq. The best way to make sure you move from the category of being bombed to the country of doing the bombing is to have nuclear weapons. So again, I think the U.S. may have inadvertently encouraged the creation of nuclear arsenals in other countries because, frankly, that's the best mechanism to ensure that the U.S. never, ever tries to engage in regime change in your country. There's also the matter of prestige. Let's be frank. Who on earth would care what the North Koreans did unless they had nuclear weapons? Other than humanitarianism, which is a serious concern, but in a geopolitical context, who cares? Country of 23 million people, starving, isolated, absolutely no ability to influence events, not really part of the international economy. Frankly, nobody would pay the slightest attention. Kim Jong-il would be a comic figure, but not really known. Today, he is a figure who sets the front pages alight in London, in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Seoul, in Tokyo, simply by making a pronouncement or testing a weapon. And then the whole world pays attention to this man. So he gains enormous prestige from the nuclear developments. There's clearly also a value here in attempting to get bribes. If you want to get aid, if you want new power plants, if you want any number of other things, waving that nuclear weapon around may be very helpful. And I think he also wants direct contact with the U.S. The U.S. has no diplomatic relations. Until recently, we refused to talk to the North. Again, the best way to try to confront and deal with and get attention of the superpower is nuclear weapons. So all of those are reasons why I think they may want them. I'd still like to see us try to dissuade them from getting them. The question is what to do if they get them. I think number one is it makes sense to have diplomatic relations with the North. We need a window into that society. We need a mechanism of dialogue. Diplomatic relations is really a very small price to pay. We had diplomatic relations with the Soviet Union for decades. We had diplomatic relations with Nazi Germany. We've had diplomatic relations with virtually every ugly, nasty regime on Earth. I think it makes sense. It's not kind of confirming the value of their system. It's merely indicating that we need that window and that dialogue. Second is I think we should pull U.S. troops out of South Korea. South Korea has the conventional means to defend itself. The worst thing in South Korea is to provide thousands of nuclear hostages for the North. What we conveniently do today is have tens of thousands of Americans within reach of a North Korean nuclear weapon. That doesn't make any sense, and those troops are not needed on the conventional side. We also need to make clear that there is a very clear red line, and that's proliferation. I think Kim Jong-il wants these virgins in the here and now. I don't think he wants to go to heaven to get them. We make very clear to him that proliferation is a very bad idea, that if we find out any evidence of transfer of those weapons, that we would view that as a casus belli, and we'd be prepared to take out the regime. And it would be the regime. And it's not just Kim Jong-il's palace. It'd be the entire Korean Workers' Party establishment. We need to make it clear to all of his friends and relatives that they also would suffer in that case. I think the U.S. also wants to remind North Korea that of our power, of our arsenal, that we would certainly respond in a very negative fashion if he tried anything against the United States. And I think we also ultimately have to rethink the question of our nuclear umbrella and do we want to allow, if not encourage, nuclear proliferation in the region. Our challenge is, do we want a region where only the bad guys have nuclear weapons, or the potential bad guys? Do we like an East Asia where it's North Korea, China, who we worry about for the future, and Russia, who we have some concerns about today, who have nuclear weapons, and nobody else? In which case, we are expected to use our nuclear arsenal to protect our friends in the case of any dispute, any potential concern. That's an issue I think we need to debate. Do we want to have the United States on the line in any dispute that comes out of East Asia? Are we likely to find participants in the region questioning that deterrent? Are we really willing to risk Los Angeles for Taipei or Tokyo or Seoul? Indeed, are we willing to? That's a question we have to ask. We also have to wonder about the impact of a nuclear deterrent on the behavior of our friends in that context. The question of Taiwan, for example, is Taiwan more likely to pursue independence in the assumption we will defend them from China, including using nuclear weapons, does that make Taiwan more aggressive? Does that set in motion a whole set of events that might be rather dangerous in the region? So that's an issue I throw out. I think we need to talk about that. We should talk about it before we come to that issue. Do we want to maintain an umbrella in that case, or do we want to talk about democratic friends having countervailing arsenals? A very controversial argument, but one we need to discuss and confront as opposed to sweep under the bed. In the end, I would argue nonproliferation is a very useful goal, but it's a tool. It's a tool for promoting a more peaceful world. So the question is, ultimately, how do you promote it? How do you get there? I think using war to promote nonproliferation generally is not a very good and a very effective mechanism to do so. There are lots of ways we can try to dissuade North Korea from building nuclear weapons, but we also need Plan B. We need to think about what to do if they move ahead with them. We need to look for creative strategies in terms of dealing with North Korea, both to dissuade them from building nuclear weapons and to deal with them if they do so. You know, living with a nuclear North Korea is likely to be very unpleasant, but it might not be the worst alternative that we face. We need to discuss those alternatives. Thank you.